Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh, yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that Porzingis!
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. On this NFL championship weekend coming up, you will also recap our an incredible divisional round. I mean, just one that was one to remember. So many great games, games with miracle finishes, games that were close, and one pretty brutal blowout. But other than that, I mean, just a really good weekend of football. And we are due to have the entire Football Picks panel joining us tonight. Andy will join us a little later than usual. Everyone else will be with us at the top. So we'll have Andy rejoin us, you know, midstream tonight on the program. In this program, we'll also do some college football talk. We'll get into that too. Then we preview the upcoming games on conference championship weekend. It's John has said this before, but it's the way that the regular part of the NFL season ends. And after that, it just becomes a media circus, and you get a lot of people who don't follow football at all suddenly get into the histrionics of the NFL action. So this is the last of the regular football weeks as we see it here in the city. So it'll be good fun to have everybody here tonight to talk about the games, and let's get to it. So just when you thought it was over in the second quarter, just when you thought it was over in the third quarter, just when you thought it was over with about 12 seconds to go, the game between the Saints and the Vikings kept going back and forth, and it really was a sight to see. And in other action in the NFL, you had a shocker in Philadelphia, a shocker in Pittsburgh. I mean, not a shocker in Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia wasn't... I mean, that's a little unfair to the Eagles. I thought that the Eagles were a live dog. I actually liked them anyway in the game, but still, surprising for many people that the Eagles went on and they won, with a quarterback disadvantage that they had. And there you go. I mean, that sets up a very unusual conference championship Sunday. You've got Tom Brady, who just rolled over the Titans and checked the Titans right out of the playoffs. Lots going on, and we'll see what happens. So let's get to it. Lots of NFL action on the table. The madness has been incredible. Will there be more coming up? Let's hit it. Time to do a recap of the NFL divisional round and also get into the conference championships here in the city. So let's bring in our panel as of the moment. Andy has, in fact, joined us, and John has as well. Ron in New Jersey's not with us yet, but I'll check the Twitter to see if anything is updated on that. But we've got pretty much a good panel to start, so let's introduce them one by one. Let's start with John in Connecticut. John, good to have you back with us. How's it going tonight?
Good, Dave. Yeah, you said it. I mean, just some crazy, crazy action over the weekend. And it's funny how, you know, many weeks this year we kind of bitched about the low quality of the games and the NFL. It's just, you know, it's kind of dying, whatever, the at least the play on the field. And we've been rewarded with some pretty decent playoff action, that's for sure, compared to last year when there was like two good games the entire playoffs. It was the Packers-Cowboys divisional game and then obviously the Super Bowl. So definitely worth the wait to get these great divisional games that we had over the weekend.
Yeah, you said it, man. This has been a lot of fun to watch, and it was really remarkable that both days had juice. That's kind of rare. Sunday certainly had more juice than Saturday did, but overall, just a lot of fun. Let's bring in Andy to the program. Andy, welcome to the show. How's it going tonight?
Hey, Dave. Glad to be
part of the show. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely, guys. There is some college football news to report. And we can go into detail when Ron joins us, but maybe some initial thoughts before we start, just really quickly, on Arizona hiring Kevin Sumlin. It was pretty good stuff. I thought that was good. And Alabama on the precipice of possibly getting Hugh Freeze, but the SEC's maybe not having it. We don't know if they're going to approve the transaction. We'll see what happens there. Quick hitters on this for now. We can get into more detail after we do the NFL stuff. But Andy, your thoughts on these transactions?
Well, I think actually we were talking about it today on the board with Ron about the Sumlin scenario. Yeah, I think it's a very good landing spot for him. In the past, he'd be the type of coach who would have the type of team that would start out 5-0, 6-1, 4-0, whatever it may be, and then only to falter and end up 8-5, 7-5, 9-4. And obviously in the SEC, there's a lot of expectations there. A lot of fans can be a little irrational, high expectations. And, he definitely caused some of his own troubles in A&M, especially that one stretch where literally every quarterback for, and then really good quarterbacks too, or at least they were highly recruited. But in Arizona, he can go 9-3, 8-4, 7-5. Without too much backlash. They're probably more into their basketball team more times than not. And, you know, it's the Pac-12. There's a lot of idiotic coaches there. Although our favorite one, Todd Graham's not there anymore and Moore's not there anymore. So it is funny because he was being linked. It was only like 3 months ago where people thought he might be taking the UCLA job, but he ends up in the Pac-12 anyway. And then I'm not really too up to speed on the Hugh Freeze scenario, but if Saban doesn't really care what you do when it's outside the game and the practice. We've seen him give other coaches second chances before, whether it's Steve Sarkisian, whether it's Lane Kiffin. And you've seen both those guys parlay those jobs into, Sarkisian went to the NFL, Lane took Florida Atlantic, the position. So who knows what Hugh Freeze will do or what he won't do, but good stuff.
Yeah, it's some interesting fodder, I think, for the college offseason to start. I mean, already we've got some good stuff. So let's go to John. Any additional thoughts on the transactions?
Yeah, I'm just reading on a Twitter scenario that reports are now saying that Mike Locksley is now going to be named Alabama offensive coordinator. And for those, really in-depth college football fans will know, he was once the head coach at New Mexico, and I think he went literally 2-35 in his 3 years there, and then somehow ended up at Maryland as an offensive assistant, whatever. And then Bama gave him a shot the last couple of years. Bama has like a staff of like 20 guys. I mean, Saban just hires people as analysts and those kind of things. And I guess now he's going to be promoted to offensive coordinator. So we'll see how that works out. But as for someone, I think it's a very nice landing spot for him. Definitely less pressure, as Andy had said. And I think Arizona upgraded from Rich Rod to someone. And I know, Rich Rod had that one year where they made a big bowl game. I think it was the Fiesta Bowl. And his offense is pretty dynamic. But you could kind of see, that their offense, it has a ceiling, so to speak. I mean, I guess you could maybe say the same thing for someone, but if I'm an Arizona fan, I'd be happy with that switch. If you look in the division where he's coaching, you got Herm Edwards at their biggest rival. Okay, well, that's not going to last long. Dave Clay Helton isn't exactly a master on the sidelines. So really, he's only got to worry about Chip Kelly and the Utah guy, Whittingham. So, you know, I would say he's probably the third best coach in that division already. So I think it was a good decision by Arizona and a nice fit for someone after getting fired at A&M. So good job all around there.
Yeah, I think it may end up being a win-win for both A&M and for Arizona in the end. So next year's going to be interesting. We'll see where Arizona ends up. I mean, yeah, winning 8 games a year, that's actually pretty good when you're the Wildcats. So when you've got Khalil Tate, I think they could absolutely be a contender. There's a guy, a writer that said that they could be in the top 25 next year. They could, absolutely. I don't see why not. I mean, not like that division's that exciting anyway, you know. It's very gettable. Anyway, let's get to the NFL. Let's get back to our topic. And John will stay with you and talk about last week's action. I mean, it was really incredible. So rather than go any longer, let me give it to you to get your thoughts.
All right, yeah. I mean, I guess we'll just, you know, we won't even talk about the Pats and Titans. You know, you kind of thought you might have a little juice there at the start of the game. I almost think the Patriots let teams do this. They get ahead 7-0 or play a sluggish first quarter to, you know, give the other team overconfidence, and they just completely blitz them after that. 8 sacks and pretty much what we expected by the end of the game, winning by 3 touchdowns. So let's talk about the other 3 games. I completely misread the Atlanta Philadelphia game. I mean, what a complete joke the Falcons are. Time and time again, they prove they're just complete frauds. And I don't know who to blame in this scenario. Is it Matt Ryan? Is it Steve Sarkisian? Is it Dan Quinn? Who knows? I mean, their defense played fairly well. If you told me before the game that they were going to hold the Eagles' offense to 15 points, I would have said, okay, they're going to win the game. Easy. And just a complete and absolute no-show in the second half. I don't know what Sarkisian's doing on those play calls at the end of the game. Shovel pass on second down goes nowhere. And then on fourth down, it's like fourth and goal on the, 2 or 3 yard line. Theoretically, this is your best 2-point conversion play, what you've practiced all year to put in the moment of the season. And they do a stupid rollout to the right, which ends up Ryan throwing it off balance to Julio Jones, a completely broken play. So, you know, that was just a complete disgrace by the Falcons at the end of the game. And I saw today that Steve Sarkisian will be back next year as the Falcons play caller, which if I'm a Falcons fan, I'm jumping up the nearest window right now because it's probably going to be more of the same. But yeah, that was pretty embarrassing. I mean, you got to give the Eagles credit for sure. I mean, their defense played as well as they could, held the Falcons pretty much the entire second half and had that goal line stand. Foles did what he had to do and made some throws. They got the running game going. And I think you could definitely tell that they used the fact that they were an underdog as like kind of a motivational chip. You saw the guys on the field wearing dog masks at the end of the game. You'll probably see that same thing again this week for the Vikings, that same kind of angle, at least from the Eagles coaching staff. So, you know, I did not expect them to win, but they did and they move on. So good job by them. And then on Sunday, you have the Jags and Steelers. I had taken the Jags hypothetically with the spread here. I thought it was going to be a close game. Did not really expect the Jaguars to win, but I'm not surprised with what happened. You know, the Steelers clearly were, you know, they could say whatever they want, but they were clearly looking ahead to the Patriots game. I mean, you had Le'Veon Bell tweeting about, you know, 2 round 2s, 2 weeks in a row. Well, I mean, you got to win the first game, you know, and, you know, that didn't happen. Tomlin outcoached once again in a big game, made some head-scratching decisions, especially on those fourth down situations where, you know, it's the perfect spot for a quarterback sneak, and you have Ben throwing way down the field and then on a toss sweep against one of the fastest defenses in the NFL. It didn't exactly make much sense. I know Todd Haley is the offensive coordinator. Well, no longer, if you read the story mm-hmm. today, he's out at that job. But it just those play calls made no sense. People were getting on him for the onside kick at the end of the game. I mean, listen, I'm all for playing aggressive. I mean, you got to try to get the ball back there. Who cares? I mean, you can't stop him after the onside kick. Then, you know, you're not gonna win anyway if you kick it deep and you can't stop him. So you might as well just try to get it back there. So I didn't have too big of a problem with that. But overall, I mean, they just looked sluggish and not ready to play at the start of the game. The Jaguars pretty much did whatever they wanted. on offense. Bortles looked pretty good compared to his game against the Bills, where he was just a complete he just had an awful game against Buffalo. And on Sunday, he made some big throws. I mean, you know, the stats aren't eye-popping, but when he had to make a throw and convert, he did it. Fournette had a big game. And I know their defense gave up 42 points, but some of those plays by Antonio Brown and their receivers, they're just ridiculous. I mean, there's not many teams in the NFL with a guy like Antonio Brown. So I'm not going to be really nervous about the Jaguars' defense, you know, going forward into this game against the Patriots. I'm sure we'll talk about the matchup in a little bit. But, they just made some ridiculous plays. And, you know, kudos to the Jaguars. They were ready to play, and, you know, they're going to move on. And, you know, certainly a live dog, that's for sure, in New England. And then you have the fourth game. I mean, I don't even know where to start on this one. I mean, 17-0 Vikings after pretty much 2.5 quarters, and you thought, I mean, there's no way the Saints are going to do anything against this defense. And all of a sudden, you know, you started to see some leaks in that Vikings defense. Breeze led a couple touchdown drives. Keenum got a little tight, had some turnovers. You had the blocked punt, and then the teams traded field goals back and forth to the point where you finally, you know, you thought, oh, well, it's over here. The Vikings are going to throw up a Hail Mary or whatever play and get tackled, and that's the end of it. And I have no idea, still have no idea what that Saints cornerback is thinking when he goes for the hit on Diggs. I think he was trying to avoid maybe a personal foul, helmet-to-helmet penalty that would have extended it by 15 yards. I mean, that's the only possible explanation I can get for that kind of action that he took. But just a brutal way to lose. I mean, if I'm a Saints fan, I'm never recovering from that game. Literally 10 seconds left. The Vikings needed a miracle to win that game, and they got it. And, you know, they're one game away now for the Super Bowl, and it sets up the Foles versus Keenum NFC Championship game. The Jeff Fisher revenge game, I guess. And somewhere Jeff Fisher is smiling because those were the two guys, the 2015 St. Louis Rams roster, which is just, if you had said that before the season started, I think people would have thought you're on another planet. But just an unbelievable game on Sunday. And, you know, like I said, if I'm a Saints fan, that's going to stick with me for a long, long time, that play. I'll be interested to hear what Andy's thoughts are on all these scenarios.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll update you as far on the offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh. So, not only did Haley not get the extension or get another contract, they hired the successor just a couple hours ago. They hired Randy Fichtner to be the offensive coordinator. He was the quarterback's coach at Pittsburgh for the Steelers, and so now he's getting the promotion to be the OC. So that's kind of an interesting hire. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about him, but I think you can't really do much worse than Haley, so... we have Biebs with us. So, Ron in New Jersey, welcome back to the show. How's it going tonight?
Dave, how you doing? I'm sorry I hopped on late. I totally forgot that it was Wednesday night. You know, Martin Luther King Day threw me all off this week. The entire day I thought it was Tuesday. I was sitting here being a schlub until you sent that text message.
So, oh, no worries.
always good to jump on.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll get your thoughts on someone after we do the recap, but I'm very excited to hear what you have to say about that too, so it should be good. So to Andy, let's get your recap of last week. I know you've got a lot to say, so we'll give it to you now.
Yeah, hold on one second. I think people are still complaining about all the calls from the first half of that Patriot game. quiet. Game's over. No, seriously. I know. I do know there are some calls. There were some calls that were a little sketch, but the game wasn't 19-17. The game was 35-7. It was about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter before the kid from Western Michigan caught his second touchdown. So I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. But anyway, the first game, John pretty much nailed it. Atlanta, you bet on them. They don't show up. bet against them, and then Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Quinn and their running backs do all sorts of good things. But they did nothing. They did nothing. The only touchdown they got was basically because the Eagles muffed a punt. So they were basically a little Christmas gift under the Christmas table. Here, you take the ball at like the 20-yard line. And if you can't score a touchdown here, then you don't deserve to be in the playoffs. That was the only score, the only touchdown they had. They had a bunch of stalled drives. You know, I'm not a football coach. I'm just a couch potato. But nothing gets me, well, a lot of things get me mad, but nothing gets me mad like when you're just flirting into field goal range and it's like 3rd and 3 from the other team's 47-yard line. Like just another first down and you're flirting in field goal range. And Atlanta just seems to be, they're kings of just getting close to field goal range and just doing something stupid, stalling a drive, and then you have to punt. They did that about 3 times in the first half. How about the end of the first half? Foles basically wanted to throw an interception, and the freaking cornerback, or basically he jumps too early, and the ball bounces off his knee, ends up being a completion. They get a field goal out of it. Atlanta gets what drives me nuts is Atlanta had a great chance to score to end the first half, then they're going to get the ball to start the third quarter, and they end up giving a field goal to end the first half, and then they go 3 and out on their first drive of the third quarter. Just, you have no respect for the postseason possessions, and Steve Sarkisian's coming back. Well, good for you. Good for you, you chokers. Nice season. And then I read this stat on Monday, because I'm a glutton for punishment, and just like I like reading about bad stats. Apparently, Julio Jones, 20 throws between Matt Ryan and Julio Jones in the red zone this year, and I think he caught 2 of them. So they need to work on their chemistry. Or, you know, it's funny, like Sanu, you know, I know this isn't a fantasy podcast, but Sanu, I bet Sanu had more touchdowns or had bigger games than Julio Jones from a touchdown standpoint. Obviously, if you were drafting a team, you'd be nuts not to take Julio Jones instead of Sanu. But it just seems like Sanu was a better target in the red zone than Julio Jones. But I don't have any stats in front of me. The Patriot game, yeah, that was Deion Lewis did his thing. Everyone thought Brady can't, the 40-year-old man in those cold temperatures. Oh, he looked so bad against the Jets. Well, he ended up having 35 for 52 or whatever. I guess that's pretty good. So all those CBS studio analysts from Bill Cowher to Boomer Esiason can get bent. Well, we'll see you next week against the Jaguars. Sunday morning out here. You know, so one of these days, I guess I'll have to take Blake Bortles on the road, maybe next season. But my goodness, Dave, those Steelers, you know, I was tweeting like an angry old man on Sunday morning with all sorts of outrage. Just for that first drive, just Blake Bortles, he must have just been playing with house money after that first playoff victory the week before against the Bills. Now he comes out loosey-goosey, running game. Fournette had a great game. And Bortles, he played pretty well. And, oh, my goodness, the guts of Jacksonville to go for it on 4th down. That first drive really set the tone. And I was like, can I buy my bet? It's too late. It's too late. And then the Steelers had a bad drive. And then it's 14-0. And, you know, the Steelers had a chance to get back in it. But, you know, that stupid 4th down call. Now it's 21-0. And they just dug themselves a little too big of a hole. In the second half, it was kind of like a bizarro shootout. Now, who would have thought the final score of that game was going to be what it ended up being? I mean, sometimes it takes the Jaguars a whole month to score 40 points. And they did it in one game, basically. So, you know, Tomlin, we get on Tomlin a lot, and you know, he did well first when he first came in the league. You know, he got to two Super Bowls, basically, you know, back to back against the Cardinals and the Packers. But since then, you know, it's a lot of hot air. A couple 8-8 seasons, a lot of playing down to their opponents. They can't play Cincinnati every week. They can't play the Houston Texans every week. And just it's just the distractions that Bell was alluding to, and you know, worry about your contract when the season's over, and just too many dumb play calls, and you know, they have to have been looking ahead to the Patriots, and you didn't respect Jacksonville, even though you said you wanted Jacksonville. Well, you let Jacksonville beat you twice in your own building, so we stew on that this summer. And then, my freaking goodness, Ass Clown versus the Vikings. And I had two bets, because at one point the line was 5, so I made a bet, Saints minus 5, or Saints getting 5, and I had Saints plus 5.5 for another bet. And so it still felt like, you know, kissing your cousin at the end because of that crazy play. But, you know, it feels like the Saints had the ball for, like, the entire second quarter and third quarter, but they still really couldn't do anything about it. The first quarter was awful. It seems like every time you were watching the Saints on third down, they were committing a penalty to extend the drive to the Vikings. And, you know, it was just a bad sign. You know, the Saints went 3-and-out their first drive. And then at one point, and I think it was the second quarter, breeze through, you know, an interception. It just looked all out of sorts. But, you know, I'll give Ass Clown credit. He really played well for the majority of the game, especially in the second half. I feel like both teams could have managed the clock better in that very, you know, the last 5 minutes of the game where they're going back and forth with field goals and whatnot, especially the Saints. I think there's that one instance where Sneed stepped out of bounds on first down, and, you know, so Minnesota didn't have to take a timeout. So when they got the ball back with the 20 seconds or whatever, they had that one timeout left. So good job, Sean Payton. And here's what I'll get on. Do you remember that fucking 3rd-and-1 play with about 6 minutes left or 8 minutes left in the game, season on the line, and you're gonna have Willie Snead throw a wide receiver pass? The guy was open, so the play obviously worked, but there's a reason why Snead's not a quarterback, and there's a reason why Drew Brees is a quarterback. That's just classic Sean Payton outthinking himself. My goodness. And I guess he was like mocking the Vikings' skull clap at the end of the game. Good riddance to you, Sean Payton. And so now we get to watch freaking Case Keenum and Nick Foles next week. I have no idea what's going to happen there. We'll talk about that later. But, you know, we did have some entertaining games. It just drives you nuts how these teams that have obviously very talented, high-caliber players, but time and time again, they beat themselves up. They beat themselves up rather than the other team, like, taking it to them. And you become your own victim. And this drives me nuts sometimes.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I love the tweet you wrote in the middle of the game where you said that Drew Brees takes, I think you literally said Ass Clown takes years off of your life. And man, I mean, if you had a play on that, and I did, and I'm sure John did, I'm pretty sure even Biebs may have had a play on it. That 5-point thing was looking, first of all, it looked terrible, right? It was 17-0. And then, you know, at the end of the third quarter, it was the same score. I'm like, well, I think the Saints are going to come back here. And then they did. And then only to have the lead go back and forth like that. That play was a miracle. It was unbelievable. Like, I actually thought that, you know, when Stephon Diggs caught the ball in the final play of the game, I was like, why isn't he going out of bounds? But then you realize that he must have known that there's nothing in front of him, and he just goes for it. Because if somebody tackles him in the middle of that, the game's over because they run out of time. There's no way to stop the clock. So that was really interesting how that game ended. And then the extra point that Joe Buck thought was meaningless. Joe, do some homework, would you please? I mean, that millions of dollars were on the line on that extra point attempt, and the Vikings wound up just kneeling to preserve the push for a lot of us and the cover for others. But that was an unbelievable finish. It was really quite a weekend. So let's go to Ron in New Jersey and get your thoughts on what was a really wild NFL divisional round.
Yeah, you know, for as bad as some of the games have been this year, I mean, last weekend definitely made up for it. Sunday's games especially were just, both amazing games. John and Andy covered them all perfectly. You know, the Atlanta Eagles game, I mean, if that doesn't show you that Steve Sarkisian is, you know, should be nowhere near an NFL field calling a game, I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. And you look at the Falcons roster, and you look up and down the offense with Ryan, and they have two great running backs in Freeman and Coleman. Sanu is a pretty good number two. I mean, Julio Jones, when he's healthy, could be the best receiver in football. Austin Hooper is criminally underused as a tight end, and they have a good offensive line. And I mean, they put out some of the shittiest games this year on offense. Sarkisian's play calling this year was just atrocious from the first game of the season till last Saturday, and how he's back again next year just boggles my mind. I mean, if you've seen one Falcons game this year, you've seen them all. It's a run on first down, usually a third and long, and they throw a pick play slant to Mohamed Sanu that either goes for 15 yards or gets stopped short of the first down. I mean, it's the same thing every single time. He's taken his best weapon, Julio Jones, and basically made him a decoy for Matt Ryan to throw underneath the Julio Jones to Mohamed Sanu. And I thought they were going to kill the Eagles. I really did. I thought they had some momentum basically from their defense at the end of the year, and I thought that was going to carry them in and, you know, create some turnovers and be able to beat the Eagles. So give the Eagles credit. You know, Foles didn't do anything special, but he didn't lose the game for the Eagles. So I guess it's a positive you look at, and you got to see why home field does mean something in the NFL playoffs. Good for the Eagles. The Patriots, I mean, anybody who complains about calls in that Patriot-Titan game wasn't watching, because, I mean, the Titans didn't have a shot from the get-go. And to be honest with you, I know a lot of people were upset that that Malarkey got fired after taking them to the second round of the playoffs. But in my opinion, I mean, good riddance. I mean, that's another team where you look at the roster on that team, it's talent at every position. And I mean, they basically made the playoffs by default this year. And almost everybody to a man on that offense regressed this year from last year, especially Marcus Mariota. Just a plodding offense, took away all his skills. So I think the best thing for that franchise is to get somebody new in and be able to take Mariota to the next level. Because, I mean, he has glimpses where he's really damn good. And, on the same hand, he has plays where you ask yourself, what the hell are you doing? But again, they have Davis at wide receiver. They have Delonte Walker, Derrick Henry, who is criminally underused until the end of the year. I mean, Jesus, that should have got Malarkey fired just for that. I mean, the way that he ran that offense into the ground was mind-numbing. So, the Patriots are the Patriots. And, you know, for someone who plays, the daily fantasy leagues, it is so frustrating using the Patriot players. I mean, you go into last week and you expect, big game from All the running backs are injured, and Deion Lewis is putting up 1,000,000 points all season. So you expect a big game from him, a big game from Cooks with you know, Hogan and Amendola basically doing nothing the entire year. A big game from Gronkowski, and who ends up catching 11 passes but Amendola, and who ends up scoring 2 touchdowns? James White, who came out of nowhere, off of the injured reserve to score 2 touchdowns. But it just goes to show you how much depth they have and how good they are across the board. So, I mean, that game was over from the start, in my opinion. And then Sunday's games, 2 classics, 2 great games. Good for the Jaguars. I didn't think they had it in them. I thought Pittsburgh would get some revenge for the beating that they took early in their season. But, you know, hindsight being 2020, we should have known, given all the talk that they did of the Patriots leading up to that game. You can never underestimate a team like Jacksonville, who has just a tremendous defense like they do. But, you know, Pittsburgh made it a game at the end, and, you know, I was – writing as the game was going along how, death taxes and Ben Roethlisberger throwing somebody under the bus after a loss. We've seen it every single year after every time they get eliminated, and it took him an extra day, but, you know, he did. He went onto radio and said, somebody asked him about why don't they run the quarterback sneak on 4th and 1 or 4th and inches. And he threw his coaches under the bus, said they would never call that for him, even though he wants to run it. And look what happened. He got Todd Haley fired. So, eventually when his playing career is over, and I know he's had a great career, there's going to be a book written about the animosity that he carries with his teammates and his coaches. And I think we're going to be in for, a surprise to find out that he's probably one of the, the biggest crybabies and dicks behind the scene. And you just knew it was coming. I mean, at one point in the third quarter, I think they had a 3, or it was one of the times when they went for it on 4th down and didn't get it. And I mean, you just look at him and he just had a look where, he could care less, we're going to lose this game. And, you flip a switch, a couple series later, they score a touchdown and he starts, getting up in everybody's face. Like, he's all pumped up and he's into the game. I mean, he is one of the, in my opinion, he's one of the biggest crybabies in sports. And, I at the end of the game, I was happy that the Jaguars won and, Leonard Fournette showed up and just ran the ball down their throats. I was happy at the end of that game to see Big Ben out of the playoffs where he deserves to be. And, everybody covered the Saints-Vikings game perfectly. I mean, that was an instant classic, one of the best games you'll ever see. I didn't have any money on the game, but for some reason, I can't tell you why. And, I've been married to my wife for 8 years. I've been with her for 11 years and I still don't know why, but she's a huge Saints fan. And for some reason she got stuck with the Saints. And, so to see it from that perspective, I mean, it was crushing. That last play was just, insane. But, when you step back as a football fan, I mean, that was as good as it gets. Mike Zimmer, he may or may not be, Lombardi or, an all-time coach, but it's the little things at the end, the way that he used his timeouts that even gave them a shot. After New Orleans kicked that field goal, they still had 30 seconds left. I know from personal experience with, 15 years of Herm Edwards to Mangini to Rex Ryan to Todd Bowles, the Jets would have had no time left on the clock. Either that or they would have had 3 timeouts left with 2 seconds left on the clock. So, it's nice to every once in a while see a coach who actually uses the clock correctly. And, that's something, people don't really talk about, but, he gave the Vikings a shot at the end. And, that's a one in a lifetime play that happened. with Diggs. And, you know, it, to me, and you say what you will about Marcus Williams, but, you know, he's had a tremendous rookie year coming out of Utah. And he was one of the best graded rookie defensive backs this year. So, you know, it was just a bad play by him. And honestly, I thought he tried to take the lazy route. And I think he tried to just duck down and take out Diggs' legs from underneath him. You know, make one of those highlight plays where he flips the guy over and, you know, the play runs, the clock runs out and the game's over. And he whiffed. He just whiffed. It's one of those things. And Diggs scored the touchdown. It really was a miracle. And I guess, you know, the true miracle was, and this is just a personal note. You know, so I'm going into, we have our FanDuel with, you know, my brother runs it, and I don't know, I'm up 12, 11 points, something like that on that last play. I'm in first place, and I'm thinking to myself, the game's over. You know, best thing they can do is maybe throw a pass and attempt a field goal. And, you know, that happens. Big scores, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder who was in who, because somebody was in second place, 11, 12 points down.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder who they had on the Vikings. I know they had a receiver. So I go and check, and it was Stephon fucking Diggs. And I look to see, I ended up losing by a point and a half on that last play. And who was it? But, our buddy Checker on a Checker, Big John.
Wow. John.
That is correct.
Could not believe it. But
it's funny. I'm sorry to interrupt. No, it's funny because I was literally sending him like, I had a draft tweet prepared. Saying congratulations, you know, he had a nice roster, and then all of a sudden that play happens and I hadn't seen it. I mean, obviously I was happy about it, but that was I've been on both sides of those FanDuel scenarios. It's pretty crushing when your winnings literally drop after one play. But yeah, definitely on the good side that time.
Yeah, I was, you know, when I saw it was John, I was genuinely happy, you know, because if it was somebody like LT or or TI, I would have threw my fucking phone against the wall. But yeah, I was happy that it was him, and you know, it's a one in a million scenario, but you know, that's why what makes football so great, and you know what keeps us coming back and tuned in.
Yeah, and we're gonna remember that play for years and years and years. It's pretty awesome. So that's a good lead up to this weekend's action. I will get your thoughts on someone after we do these previews, but we'll go back to John and let's now get your preview. Should we do this one by one or do them both? I guess we'll do them both. So the first game on Championship Sunday is the Jaguars at the Patriots. The Jaguars line against the Patriots, the Jaguars started off as a 9.5-point underdog. It has gone down to 9. There are some places as of the moment that have the Patriots favored by now only 8.5. So there is some confidence from the public on the Jaguars, which I guess I shouldn't be that surprised about because they obviously we all saw the game against Pittsburgh. So I think there's some renewed confidence in Jacksonville to at least keep the game a little closer. So that's the story there. The next game is the NFC Championship game. Between the Vikings, who just had that big miracle, they're going at the Eagles, and once again, very little respect for the Eagles, as the Eagles are a 3-point underdog at home in this NFC Championship game. So it's going to be a very interesting matchup from the standpoint of the fact that you got two quarterbacks that they're not ideal candidates, you know, not great quarterbacks, and it should be close. I mean, it would seem to me that you'll get a low-scoring game in the NFC title because both teams have great defenses, and it should be a very interesting battle of coaching wits with Doug Peterson coaching the home team and Zimmer coaching the road team. And I honestly think that both coaches have been pretty good this year, so that's a good place to be. So let's go to John and get your first look at the previews for these two championships.
Yeah, it should be two really good games, and I think you nailed it. Dave, on the style difference between the two. I guess I'll start in the NFC. You know, like you said, two very good defenses, two very good defensive lines. The Vikings have a great secondary, too. I guess the one weakness on the Eagles, I would say, is their secondary. You've seen on some of these play, some of these games kind of towards the end of the season where they can get beat on double moves. I mean, the Giants were roasting them all day on those plays. You saw on Christmas night with Amari Cooper, same kind of play, got absolutely burnt one of their cornerbacks. So that is one weakness on the Eagles' defense. Will Case Keenum be able to take advantage of it? I don't know, because, like I said, the defensive line for the Eagles is just excellent. You saw that on Saturday against the Falcons. So I think this game will come down to, you know, what those like kind of little plays where, you know, who muffs a punt or, you know, which punter pins the other team inside the 10, leading the other offense to get good field position on the return punt, those kind of things, because this is going to be like a 17-14 type of game. It's going to be pretty ugly, honestly. I'd be pretty ugly to watch, but for those kind of really football purists that enjoy like a defensive battle, and coaches matching wits, I think this will be a great game for you. I'm not saying it's going to be a bad game. It's just going to be, might be a tough watch for those who like really enjoy offense. You know, Keenum's had a great year. I mean, we kept waiting for him to just, all right, well, one of these weeks, he's just going to throw three interceptions and completely blow up. And, you know, Vikings are going to switch quarterbacks. It never happened. I mean, he even Sunday, he had a great game. Now, towards the end, he was kind of getting a little, you know, kind of started floating balls up there as the Saints brought more pressure. And I think the Eagles, you know, probably took note of that and said, okay, well, we have this great defensive line. You know, let's send some blitzes, get after the quarterback and force him to make some mistakes. So, you know, if I'm going to pick this game with the spread, I'll go Eagles plus +3 just because I think, like I said, it's going to be a close, low-scoring battle. In that scenario, I'll take the home team getting the points. I can't say if the Eagles are going to win or not, because it easily could be 17-16 Vikings, and that wouldn't surprise me either. But with the points, give me Philly plus +3. And then the AFC, I mean, you know, it's tough to say here that the Jaguars are going to go into New England and win. But honestly, I think they have a better chance than the Steelers would have just because of their defense. Like I said earlier, I wouldn't get too overly anxious about Jacksonville giving up 42 points just for the fact that Antonio Brown was just making some unbelievable catches, you know, that no one else was going to make. So I think they can play their base defense and do pretty well against the Patriots. The style of team that's beat New England in the playoffs is exactly this kind of Jacksonville team. Run the ball, control the clock. The quarterback doesn't have to make too many big plays. Just, you know, don't make any turnovers and then let their defense do the work. And that's what the Jags are going to do. And I think 9 points is too many. I mean, I'm not going to call for the outright upset. It wouldn't shock me if the Jaguars somehow won this game. You know, you got to pressure Brady and get him off his spot. That's what Miami did so well. They need to watch that Miami game from late in the year where Brady was just, he looked awful in that game. That's what happens when you pressure him. You know, easier said than done, but I think the Jags have the blueprint to do it. I'll take them with the spread, certainly getting 9. And I think, you know, it's going to be a touchdown game if, you know, Patriots win. And like I said, I wouldn't be shocked if the Jags get the upset. So I'll go with both dogs for championship weekend. It's kind of been the theme for the playoffs, and we'll keep that going this week.
All right, so there are the predictions from John in Connecticut. Now let's go to Andy in Seattle and get your preview and predictions for Championship Sunday.
Thanks, Dave. You know, I guess I'll talk about that Patriots-Jaguars game first. Speaking of refs, apparently one of the officials that will be doing the Pats game, he's got a history. I guess the Patriots don't have a great record with him in the mix. And one of the games was against the Jets a couple years ago. I think the Jets ended up winning in overtime. It was like week 16 or week 17. Ron probably remembers the game better than I do. Or it's utter disaster with a Jet fan. He'd remember everything start to finish. But I think it was a late season game 2 years ago. And the Pats lost like 16-10. I think it went. I think it was an overtime game, but felt like 16-10, because you know I think it was 16-10. I'm not sure. And then the other game that he was a part of was that Monday night game, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, against, it would be 4 years ago, against Carolina, and Gronkowski thought he got held, and Brady was like screaming at the ref's face, running into the tunnel, and everyone was like, Brady's a bad sport. But apparently there's some Twitter articles about like, whoa, you know, this ref's got history with New England. So, but again, teams get good calls, teams get bad calls. You just got to move on to the next play and see what happens. But, you know, John mentioned the Jaguars being a tough match for the Patriots, basically like in the end of October. Now, John's been on the Jacksonville gambling bandwagon from day one, and I've never had the guts to do it. But he definitely raises some good points. And Bortles, goodness gracious, I don't know what they got, but you know, he's not gonna, he can lose it for him. He won't win it for him. He's just gotta, you know, be that, you know, the cliche game manager. Now, having said that, I think the Patriot defense will play a little better than the Steeler defense. I know Bill Belichick's kind of, he rubs many people the wrong way. He's grouchy. He doesn't treat the media very nice. But he gets his players to buy into the program, and, you know, they're not going to look past the Jaguars. This is an AFC championship game. You know, you've got the Super Bowl to play for here. You have to appreciate these experiences. And I don't think they're going to get 7 or 8 sacks like they did last week against Mariota. I guess they said Mariota might have been a little hampered with some sort of quad or lower leg injury that probably affected his mobility. That's the one thing. The Patriots don't really have a great pass rush. They don't blitz that often. So to see them have all those sacks was kind of odd. But, you know, they have a game plan to limit Fournette. Offensively, you don't know what they're really going to do. Today, Brady hurt his hand in practice. Maybe that's why the line went down to 8.5. He did not address the media. He was supposed to talk to the media today. He went to the doctor's office instead, had an x-ray. X-rays are negative, so who knows what's going wrong with his hand. It might be a jammed finger, it might be a sprain. No one's going to know until Sunday, and even then he still might not know. But so maybe you get some ground in town with Deion Lewis or James White catching passes out of the backfield. It is funny, Ron mentioned it, like Amendola saves his best games for the playoffs. You know, he basically had the best game of the year last week, and James White has been hurt for most of the year, and then look at him, he scored the first touchdown, and Hogan came back. They'll probably try to get Gronk involved down the middle. You know, Cooks didn't do too much last week, so who knows what will happen. If I was Andy that was born and raised in Washington, D.C., I might take Bortles, but since I'm Andy the clown Patriot fan, I'll probably, you know, I'd say New England to cover and expect, you know, Bortles to throw a pick deep in his own territory in the fourth quarter that could swing the game from a gambling standpoint. But, don't forget, Tom Coughlin will be in the building. So Patriot fans are scared of him. That is true. It'll be a rematch from 1997. This was an AFC championship matchup from 1997. Obviously, the only common denominator, I think, is Coughlin between the two teams. So, welcome home, Tom. It's funny. I think Ron, I think, was the one that mentioned P-Dot legit. This is no like make-believe P-Dot. This is the real thing. When the Jags scored against Buffalo, P-Dot was like, Tom's writing notes in his like on notebook paper. Like, he gets it. Everyone else is celebrating. Tom's just focused at the task at hand. My goodness. Well, we'll see what happens. Good luck. Good luck to Father Tom. And, well, you know, obviously, hopefully New England can get the job done, because I don't know if you're a neutral fan, you want to hear. I think all of us here do a good job of just drowning out the noise, especially the week before. You know, there's 2 weeks between the championship games, conference championship games, and the Super Bowl. So that first week, you know, you don't have to buy, you don't have to get sucked into the hype or any of those like media driven narratives. And so it's like, you want to hear about the Pats or the Jags. I don't know. It's going to be a tough Super Bowl to build up the Jags versus either the Eagles or the Vikings. And speaking of those other two teams, yeah, I don't really know where to go. It's obviously Nick Foles isn't going to be the Nick Foles that threw 27 touchdowns and two interceptions like he did like in 2012 or whatever. But obviously it's a different Nick Foles than we saw Christmas night against the Raiders and the last week of the year against Dallas, when they literally couldn't score. You know, obviously with 3 weeks of full set of reps with the first team, he's gotten a little better. You know, but that Viking defense is pretty top notch. I agree with John. You know, it could be like a 10-9 game, 13-12, 14-13, you know, 19-16, something weird like that. And, you know, if you're used to seeing, you know, pinball space age offense, like, you know, like we all saw on January 1st with Oklahoma, Georgia, this is going to be the opposite. So for some people, they'll definitely be really into it. You know, the football purists that like to see good defense and sound fundamental offense, I think we'll see a lot of that. I'm not sure what the weather forecast is. If it's cold, I would probably lean Eagles, because they're an outdoor team used to the elements. And yeah, it's just these unproven quarterbacks, it's really hard to build a case for either of them. But since we're on the podcast, I will put my money, or I'll say the Vikings. Give me the Vikings for the NFC to cover and win. And then if it is New England, then everyone can build up, oh, Tom Brady got a chance to win the Super Bowl on the road, you know, build that narrative till we're all sick of it.
Yeah, we're gonna have narratives up the wazoo over the next two weeks, Andy. Let me give you some predictions before we get to Biebs. In the AFC game, I don't know, people. You know, John presents a good case. He presented the case right after the Steeler game for Jacksonville. But I'm gonna lay the points and go Patriots minus whatever it is, 9, 8, whatever it ends up being on Sunday. I just think it really boils down to the simple fact that you're looking at Tom Brady versus Blake Bortles. And I think, you know, Bortles had a very nice game, and it was fed off of play action, and he was throwing the ball, you know, down the middle, crossing routes. I mean, that sort of stuff works because you can keep the team guessing. In the case of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the running game was just having their way with Pittsburgh. I don't have a real feel for what the run defense is like for your Pats, Andy, but I think they can be more effective. And so I'm guessing it could end up being a little bit more neutralized, that aspect of the game. But I don't know. I mean, even with this prediction, I don't even know if it's going to happen, because I don't think anybody should be shocked if Jacksonville wins. But obviously, you feel comfortable with New England winning the game anyway, because, you know, they got all that experience. And playing in New England is just a different animal altogether. And this time, unlike the Steeler game, the Patriots will be focused and prepared. So I think that's a huge factor. The coaching advantage will not be quite as gross with the Jacksonville guys this time around. So it'll be a better coaching matchup, I think, in the favor of the Pats. So we'll go Pats, and we'll lay the points. Game two. Boy, I like you, mate. Like you guys, I don't know. It's an interesting one. It's going to be a good game. It'll be tough. It'll be close. It will be rugged. I don't know how close it will be in the fourth quarter, but I think it'll be close. I think it'll be inside of 10 points. So, the Eagles are getting no respect. It's just crazy. Like, nobody's giving it. I don't know about nobody, but few people are giving them a shot in the media. I'm going to go Eagles. I'm going to go with the Eagles to win the game, even though, honestly, the Vikings are a better team. And the reason is because I just feel like, similar to John, like a week ago, I just feel like there's going to be one of these games where Case Keenum finally just throws like two or three interceptions. It's got to give. Something's got to give, honestly. And I think the Eagles defense could give him a tough time with that pass rush. So I'm going to go Eagles in that game. And so that would yield Pat's Eagles for the Super Bowl. We'll see. All right, so Rod in New Jersey, let's get your preview of the championships.
Yeah, I'll start with the AFC game because I think that's more juicy than the NFC game. And I'll be honest with you, the Jaguars remind me of the Jets teams from 2010, 2011, when they went to the AFC title game, where they had Sanchez, who really just managed the offense, all of his big plays were off of play action. They ran the ball and had an amazing defense with a shutdown corner, when Revis was in his prime. And obviously the Jaguars have Jalen Ramsey. To me, they're very similar to those teams, and those Jets teams always gave the Pats fits in the playoffs as well. So I could see it being a close game. But I've seen this show before, and I have total faith that the Patriots will, even if it is close, they'll find a way to win at the end. They usually do. So I like the Patriots. I think the Jags will cover. I could see it being, 27-20, 27-21, somewhere in that range. But I think Brady will have enough to pull it out in the end. But it should be the better game of the two and pretty competitive, which is, I guess, all we can ask for. And on the NFC side, there's questions from both sides. You could say, are the Vikings going to be in for a letdown this week after such an emotional win the week before? And, are they going to be able to withstand that atmosphere in Philadelphia, which is going to be crazy? And the weather shouldn't play a factor in it. I think it's supposed to be pretty mild this weekend here. So it should actually be pretty neutral in terms of that for the game. But even if you look at it from the other perspective, you ask yourself, with Nick Foles seeing, a top defense like Minnesota, is he going to come down to earth, or not come down to earth, but is he going to be the Nick Foles that we all expect and throw two or three interceptions and lose the game for the Eagles instead of managing it? So it could go either way. I'm with you guys. I don't think it's going to be terribly exciting. I don't think there's going to be a lot of points scored. I think it's going to come down to the kickers. Forbath and Elliott have both been really, really good this year. I like the Vikings to win. I'm just basing that off of, I think they're the better team, and I think Diggs and Thielen are both matchup problems for the Philadelphia secondary. And I know Case Keenum's not a world beater, and he's not, Kurt Warner 2.0, but I do think he's good enough to find those guys. He's proven it all year long. So I'll give the edge to Minnesota. I'll say they win and they cover, and we get a Minnesota-New England Super Bowl, which probably is the juiciest matchup that we have left. So that's the way I'm going.
And I agree with that. I think of the available matchups, that's the best possible one for a juice perspective. And the added advantage of Minnesota playing a home game in their actual home stadium, it happened with San Francisco in the 84 season, but they didn't play at Candlestick. They played at Stanford Stadium, so that's a little bit different. The Rams in the 1979 season had a home Super Bowl, but that was played at the Rose Bowl, not the Coliseum. And so a little bit different detail there. 1-1, I should say this for like 2 weeks from now. But whatever. When one of them won, the Niners crushed the Dolphins in that year, and one of them lost. The Rams lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers, which amounted to the fourth of the four Super Bowls that the Steelers won in the 70s. So, interesting history for you. So that's it for the Championship Sunday previews. Let's we have some other things to address tonight. And let's go back to the college stuff. And Ron, I definitely wanted to chat with you about the Sumlin move and the possibility of that OC thing didn't happen because Andy just mentioned that somebody got hired and it was not Hugh Freeze. So never mind. But on Sumlin, a 5-year deal in Arizona, and we'd like to see what you think about it.
Yeah, and Alabama promoted Loxley to offensive coordinator. He used to be the coach at Washington State, I think, before Leach. And he's been on that staff at Alabama for a while. So, you know, that's a good move, I guess, keep the consistency there. But Sumlin, I actually think it's a good hire by Arizona. I mean, when you look at some of the hires that we've had this, especially in the Pac-12 this offseason, with Oregon sticking with Cristobal, which, you know, I'm sure the players love, and, you know, the incoming recruits that he recruited love. But, I mean, when push comes to shove, I just, you know, I don't think he's a good fit there. And, you know, I think he's an average coach at best. And then you have Herm Edwards in Arizona State, which is going to turn out to be a disaster of a hire. You already hear stories about him, you know, punishing players who aren't showing up to the off-season workouts 5 minutes earlier, you know, or their banquets or something like that. So, I mean, that's bound to go down in flames. So I think someone's hire is pretty good in that perspective. And I was, you know, talking with Andy about this today. You know, he had a lot of pressure on him in Texas A&M. The culture was win now, you know, especially with the SEC. And from everything you read about him, you know, I think a lot of the decisions that were made with the Texas A&M program probably went, you know, against what he wanted to do, and was probably pushed more, you know, by the boosters and the administration, you know, as far as keeping Manziel and giving him every break in the world. You know, I know they had some kids accused of rape there. And from what you see, he seems to be a pretty straight-laced guy. So, you know, my thinking is you put him in an atmosphere like Arizona where he doesn't have the immediate pressure to win and win big and win every year and beat teams like Alabama and LSU and Georgia, and let him actually build that program. And, you know, I think he can do a good job. And, you know, the coaches in the Pac-12 aren't exactly, you know, lighting the world on fire. So, you know, in that perspective, I think it's a good hire. And I think, you know, give him a couple of years and maybe he doesn't win a national championship, but I guarantee Arizona will probably be, you know, 8 or 9 wins every year. And if you're Arizona, I mean, that's as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good situation for Arizona, and it's also a good situation for Sumlin. A lot of people thought that, not a lot of people, but some people thought that he would hang around and do TV. He was pretty cool, like, to watch on the megacast when they were doing the coaches' room with all those other coaches. I thought he was pretty solid on there. So I wish him the best of luck. Honestly, I think he could end up having a pretty nice run in Arizona. I just hope that the Wildcat fans don't get too crazy with the expectations. So that's as far as I'll go with that. A couple other notes, and we can just do some potpourri at this point. I wanted to commemorate a couple of passings. We will start with the legend and an icon. Keith Jackson died on, what day was that? I think that was on Sunday. That was a big one. I mean, not only was he such a great college football commentator, but he was the nicest guy. Like, everybody that's ever worked with him, like my friend Jacob Rosales, his brother was a runner for ABC Sports and did the college football. And he said that Keith was just nothing but a gentleman to him and everybody on the staff over at the ABC booth. So That was certainly great. I missed him in his prime. Like, when he, by the time I started watching college football, he was already well on the downside of his career. He'd already retired officially from the top spot, and he was doing just the West Coast Pac-12 games with Dan Fouts. And the final game he did was that 2006 Rose Bowl. I mean, an epic game. I mean, obviously a painful game from my point of view, but nevertheless a great game. It still holds up as the best game I think that's ever been played in college football. I mean, really great game. Texas-USC, Vince Young leading an unbelievable comeback. And to have Keith do that game as his final and his finale, it's pretty awesome. Like, and it was as awesome as he was as a career. So I did want to take a moment to commemorate his life and his career. He did a lot of different sports. Like, he did wide world of sports in the beginning, long ago in the 60s. He did baseball. He covered the, so a lot of people, Yankee fans know him because he did those two Yankee, well, he did those two Yankee seasons, but he did the world, the 77 World Series. And that's a World Series. Now, you didn't hear him a lot because Howard Cosell kept talking over him, but he did that series where Reggie Jackson hit three home runs in a game, game six. And obviously an indelible moment forever. And then for the Mets, actually an interesting moment too, because he did the Mets series in 86 against the Astros, a really good series, like that NLCS. One of the games went in extra innings, amazing game. So he's been around and he's been a big part of life for forever. He did narration for commercials, like even his Gatorade commercials are fun. Yeah, I'm really going to miss him, honestly. He's just the greatest guy and one to never forget. And the other passing, on a much more somber note, not that anybody dying is not a somber note, but this is an even somberer note. But we learned yesterday that Tyler Helinski of Washington State, a quarterback for them at the age of 21, died. Unfortunately, we are under the presumption that it was suicide. It's pretty much a suicide. I mean, he left a note. There's a gunshot wound to his head, and just a devastating moment for the state of Washington as we get that news. So those are your football notes. Let's go back to Andy and get your any other thoughts that were on your mind, and you're welcome to comment on the other stuff.
No, I'm not going to comment on the death. I think you nailed him right there. I guess right now we're still waiting. I guess I'll bring it up to the panel here. It's like, so Mike's technically hibernating, but you know, my friend said he's hibernating, but he's showing up everywhere. Like he goes on Bill Simmons' show every Friday. He was on Barstool today, to the chagrin of many. Tomorrow he's on the NFL Network. So you're going to start to get this. I'm going to call it right now, unless it's already happening, like the negative backlash of, Mike, you said you were going away. Like, if you're going to hibernate, hibernate. Bears hibernate. You don't see them till the spring. You don't come out for the acorn now. And go away. Go away. You said you were going to, like, go away till April. It's January. We don't want to hear you. I think that's going to happen. But it is. He is like, if you do miss Mike, you get to hear him on Friday. You're going to get to hear him tomorrow. And you could have heard him today. So I think that's kind of funny. And people are like going to complain, like, I thought he was gone. I don't want to hear him until April. And then obviously the BMC show is still kind of struggling to find its gear. I don't hate it as much as some of the other people, because I just don't listen to it. I'm just indifferent. I tried to tune in last week and I just like to hear the jingle. Then I found out there's no jingle. There's like one, there's like an audio clip of Bart Scott saying like, it's all we got. It's like, that's the jingle. Like, that's all we got. Like, geez. All right. And I'm really curious to see how they're going to do. Like, listen, we're not all fiddles, just like little baseball, but the fact remains, like, Francesa's main target base was like a lot of baseball callers, and it's going to be interesting when spring training rolls around. Like, they they've already warned the Giants head coach, Jets coach, Topic. Like, if these were tires, they were bald last week, and they're still discussing it. Like, the mileage on these tires is just, they've been kicked for a long time, and they're going to have to expand their topics, and, you know, they're going to have to do some March Madness. They're going to have to do some hockey if the Devils and the Rangers get to the playoffs, like, or they don't. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and I'm similar to you. I really haven't listened to the show since that first week. But what I've noticed on the board, and I don't know if this says anything, but people were like, oh, Maggie, what was her name? Maggie Gray, I think. Oh, man, she's the best thing about the show. And then, like, a week later, we're seeing posts this week, like, she sucks. She's not any good. So, obviously, with more sample size, people have not really appreciated her sports commentary. I'm guessing she's lost in a lot of scenarios. I don't really know. But, all right, that's an interesting place to go. Let's go to John and any other potpourri on your mind. Anything you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, I haven't listened to the show. From what I've heard, you know, people try to tune in for 10 or 15 minutes, and that's pretty much all that they can take. So I guess that's all you need to know about that show. I might give it a try at one point. We'll see. But I was looking, because I'm a sicko, I was looking at the 2018 Week 1 college football schedule, and you have some very interesting matchups. For the neutral site games, you have Alabama versus Louisville, Auburn versus Washington. Let's see, what else here? Ole Miss versus Texas Tech. Then you have Tennessee versus West Virginia. Ron's going to love that game. Tennessee is top 25 before the season. Can't wait for that one. And then LSU versus Miami is a good one in Jerry's world. And then, quite possibly better than any of those games, you have Florida Atlantic and Lane Kiffin playing at Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley. I mean, that's just going to be a fantastic game. I can't wait to watch that, and it's 8 months away. So some good matchups for week one of the college season to kind of, I guess, keep us going through the spring and summer.
Good stuff. Anything from golf? But as we just a little mini teaser as we do into our golf stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the tour is starting to pick up. We just had the first two tournaments in Hawaii. Dustin Johnson dominated the Tournament of Champions. The event this week is in Palm Springs, not a great field. The tournament you want to watch this week is on the European Tour in the Middle East. It has all the big-time players. So that'll kind of be like an on-and-off thing, you know, between guys playing in those events and then on the U.S. Tour. And then next week, Tiger Woods is back to play at the Farmers Insurance Open in San Diego. So be prepared to tune in, and then if he hits a shot in the woods, he'll be grabbing his back or something. So get ready for that. And then as we head into the spring, yeah, it should be great to start covering the golf. The golf FanDuel, that's like my second favorite sport to do on FanDuel besides football is golf. And Dave, you should get in on our duel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Much more fun, yeah. When you have to curse out a guy for, like, missing a 5-foot putt.
I can't wait. That's going to be fun. Oh, man. Are you in on that too, Ron? Are you doing do you do the golf on FanDuel?
I do. And, you know, every time I do it, I seem to end up in last place. And, you know, because my golf knowledge isn't that great. But John is usually at the top or number one. And I mean, I basically pick guys out of a hat. I haven't hit on any of them yet, that's for sure.
Ron, the name that everyone's talking about, Xander Schauffele, that's the guy. You got to get that guy.
I mean, I was picking guys last year for, like, their last name. I think one of the names was, like, you know, Dickley or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I was just making that up. I was just being a fool, because like, we were tweaking Schauffele last year on the golf show. So
I took him.
Oh, you did.
I've definitely taken him before. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, he ended up. I was going to say he ended up, like, after we made fun of him, he turned into, like, the rookie of the year and won the tour championship. Well, I think we mushed him, Dave. Like, unbelievable.
I We did. We reverse mushed him. That's funny. Oh man. Ron. Anything else? Anything else you had on your mind? I was interested to hear some more about the WFAN stuff too, and Francesa and all that.
You know, I will say this about the BMC, whatever the hell the new show is. I gave it a try. I think it was on like their second or third day. They had Dave Gettleman on, the new general manager of the Giants. And I missed the interview. But later on in the day when I got into the car and I was listening to the show, they were breaking down. They must have just ended the interview. But they were breaking down each question that they asked him and his response. And then going into, a roundtable discussion on what his answers actually meant, which was just mind-boggling to me. Definitely like an ESPN move where they tease that they're going to have a guest, and really it's just somebody's press conference, and they play the answers and discuss it. And they've used that, and this is no joke. I think I might have listened like a week and a half later, and they were still using the Gettleman interview and replaying his answers and discussing it. I mean, it's stuff like that that is going to drive the audience away, especially in New York, where it's a baseball town. Let's be honest with everybody, and you know, I mean, like Andy said, they've beaten the football into the ground. I mean, if we hear another day of, you know, how the Giants can trade Eli Manning for a first round pick, and you know, they could hire Belichick away from the Patriots, I mean, it's just laughable at this point. We're only 2 weeks in, and you know, I look forward to the day when you turn on the radio and you find out that Bart Scott just couldn't take it anymore, and he up and left, and never to see the airways again. I mean, it's just that bad.
Yeah. Well, let me put it to you, Ron. How long do you think the show will actually go?
In its current form,
yeah.
I can't see it lasting more than 6 months before they retool it. You know, even if they pair away one of them, you know, Carlin's a radio guy. He's a lifelong radio guy who's been in the area. So he'll probably stay, you know, even though I'm not the biggest fan of his, but he'll probably stay. And, you know, I think Bart Scott is the first one who gets fed up with, the negative response and having to learn baseball and the NHL and NBA. And I could see him, leaving and it becoming a two-person show, or eventually then moving Evan into the afternoon with Carlin or something like that. So I'd give it like 6 months until the middle of the summer, and then we'll probably see some changes.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. Just quick hitter on it, Andy. I mean, do you see this thing making it? I mean, definitely I see some personnel changes, but do you see like this trio going all the way through the year?
They'll probably have to change it up. I don't know anything about the radio business. Probably have to ask Siddle for that. But, I mean, they got to probably tweak some things up. But I did want to mention one thing real quick. By the way, yeah, that Giants coaching search was such a fiasco. But this is kind of Heyman of me. But during the big Blazing Bowls on New Year's Day and the championship game, a lot of people were saying really good things about the coach's corner on, like, you know, ESPN 11 or whatever it may have been on your app or the TV. And but some people were like, oh, they should do this for the Super Bowl. And then I had them like, what, you know, if you're an NFL coach, like, the last thing you probably want to do, unless you're getting paid a handsome sum, is like watch the Super Bowl and have to talk about it like during the Super Bowl. Like, wouldn't you just want to like watch that in your own leisure and rather than be under this microscope? But I did tune in here and there, and it was funny to see these cast of characters. Like, it seemed like every time I turned on, like, Gary Patterson was like the know-it-all, and he was doing most of the talking. And then Dino Babers, you know, was, he did a little bit of talking, but, you know, Holgorsen looked like he wanted to be anywhere but there, staring at the pizza. And then Belima, like, what is Brett Belima doing there? He's staring at the, he looks more lost than he does on the sideline. And I was like, I want to know what Brett Belima is thinking about that third down decision. And he just looked so disinterested and like he wanted to be anywhere but there. But Patterson definitely came across as like a know-it-all and, you know, very heady and, you know, saw the things before they took place. So, you know, like if they get the right coaches on there, it's definitely educational. But I guess I'm more of a boring, plain. I just like to watch the game with, you know, the regular announcers.
Andy, what game was that, though? Because I remember watching when I was doing MegaCast for the national championship, I remember Mike Gundy and someone.
Oh, Gundy was there, too. But I think the big day was they were doing it. They were definitely doing it during the Rose Bowl.
Oh, okay.
And I think they did it the national championship game too, because the Duke coach saw something out of the Georgia defense. He thought the Georgia defense were actually going to intercept Tua on the play that Tua ended up throwing the touchdown. So he was like, oh, this could end the game. But he was alluding to the Georgia defense, not the Alabama offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Cutcliffe definitely was, that was a fun, he was funny too. Like he had a comment, like, you remember the guy that that tried to throw a punch at the Alabama coach, one of the coaches? And then he made a great play later in the game on special teams. And Cutcliffe was like, yeah, he was probably imagining that coach on the field, and that's where he made the tackle. So I thought that was pretty funny. And by the way, that guy's out. I heard he transferred, right, Andy? Like the linebacker for Bama. So
yeah, I think so. Let's clean house.
I guess. I guess he was pretty good though, right? I mean, I mean just from my limited watching experience, but anyway. Well, we'll see how he
Dave transferred to Tennessee State, and I was actually reading his Twitter or whatever it was, and apparently he's been he's been on the move to Tennessee State since the beginning of the year.
Oh.
So there must have been existing bad blood with whoever his position coach was or something like that. So it just happened to boil over in the national championship game. But apparently that's where, that outburst came from.
Right. Okay. Good stuff. Well, I think that's a good place to end, guys. Thanks again for joining us. I would like to send the invitation again to have us all get together during Super Bowl week, but that's like 2 weeks from now. But hope you can be there. We'll have to negotiate time and place, but should be fun. So take care and enjoy the games, guys, and we'll catch up in just a bit.
All right, take it easy, boys.
All right. Good night, everyone. Good show.
Good stuff, fellas. Good stuff. Thank you very much. And that's our show tonight. So thanks, Ron. Thanks, Andy. Thanks, John. And thanks to all of you listening tonight. I look forward to listening to this on replay. So if I'm hearing myself saying that, I guess I'll replay it. But anyway, should be a fun conference championship weekend. We hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more action for you next week. But we'll be doing other sports next week as we lead up to Super Bowl week. So until then, we'll see you next time.